This is We Met You When, a podcast by journalism students at Toronto Metropolitan University. We go back in time, dig up news stories from 2013, and track down the people in those stories.
So that sound has always stuck with me. And it's one of those things that I'll continue to carry with me, not to get too dark and deep, but it's one of those things that I still can hear, even 10 years later.
We want to know what happened after their names were in the news.
I sat down at the piano and I remember trying to play. And then after like 2 minutes, I just like broke down into tears because I felt like I had lost so much of my abilities.
But we have managed to fill in some of the gaps, but there are still many mysteries. And we're so pleased that the Allison project has lasted all these 10 years.
That really started my career in doing social work with people living with dementia.
Some were teens when they were interviewed, others were adults. No one was in a position of power, but many of them felt the power a news story can have.
And I'd say, unfortunately, probably for the first couple interviews after that I gave, I think I was higher in anxiety, just kind of anticipating like, oh no, what are they going to say? Like it, you know, kind of maybe a little bit distrustful.
I connected with it on somewhat of a personal level. But I never thought that it would actually like get to this stage where it is now. And seeing that like evolution is really crazy.
We're exploring the difference a decade makes and the difference we journalists can make going forward by first going back to 2013. I'm Lily Han. You're listening to We Met You When, Season 2. This is You Saw My Name Where? Cuddle parties. That's what led us to Jessica Maxwell. While we were looking for ideas for this episode, I came across a 2013 article by Maclean's. It was actually more of a list, 5 topics university students were talking about, and a few details about each one. The headline included cuddle parties, and that caught my eye. I'd never heard of cuddle parties. I was only 10 in 2013, but learning about it now was definitely interesting. Apparently, strangers in Toronto were paying up to $40 to attend these parties. The article said they'd get together in big groups and then cuddle, spoon, and hold hands. And it said everyone wears pajamas and they all hang out on pillows on the floor. That's where I first spotted a quote from Jessica. She was a grad student studying psychology at the University of Toronto. It said, quote, Jessica Maxwell, a doctoral student at UFT who researches relationships, tells the Grid newspaper that cuddling stimulates production of the chemical oxytocin, a sort of love drug that relaxes us when it's released, end quote. So that 2013 Maclean's article was quoting Jessica's quote from a different publication, the Grid newspaper. The original article from the Grid was linked, but when I clicked on it, there was no page to be found. I thought the link didn't work, or maybe the Wi-Fi was lagging. After searching up the Grid to find the original article, I found out that the entire publication was no longer in existence. The Grid stopped publishing in 2014. I didn't find the Grid, but I did find Jessica. I searched her name and what she studies, and I found that Jessica continued advancing. She is now an accomplished tenure-track professor at McMaster University. When I spoke with Jessica, she told me she's been quoted by BBC, National Post, and many other publications since. But when I asked her about the Maclean's article from 2013, she didn't know she'd been in Maclean's.
No, so that was a surprise to me.
The article is still online, so she had a look at it.
It seems like they quoted me from an original article that I had done for The Grid, which I have like a very vague memory of. But yeah, it was kind of surprising to find out that they had taken something from that interview and kind of just like quoted it directly in McLean's. I guess on the one hand, great, I was in McLean's. But on the other hand, I think it's kind of, yeah, just interesting that, you know, like it's like they don't even really like check or anything like that.
Jessica says she does not remember McLean's contacting her to do an interview or even to confirm if that quote from The Grid was accurate. We reached out to the author of the article across email, LinkedIn, and social media platforms. After 2 weeks, no response. We reached out to McLean's 6 times by email. They did respond. Editor-in-chief Sarah Fulford wrote, quote, "I wasn't at McLean's in 2013 and have no insight into the decisions that went into that particular story. So unfortunately, I'm going to decline your invitation to comment," end quote. In journalism school, we learned that if the quote is in a public interview or press release, we can use it. But hearing Jessica's reaction, we started to question that practice. Is it okay to quote another publication without contacting the source yourself?
Generally, I would say that you use these articles as research, but the proper way to go about things or the proper method would be to contact this person again. You know, contact this person, ask the question again.
That's Liz Travers. She's president of RTDNA Canada, the Radio Television Digital News Association. Liz is also a former vice president and executive producer of CTV's National Program Canada AM. And she was an editorial leader at CTV News Channel, CTV Montreal, CBC Montreal, and Global Quebec. Decades of experience making editorial decisions.
It's all about transparency and more so every day. Like the more we're bombarded with all sources of information, the more important it is to be completely transparent, because trust in the media has dropped, you know, and one of the reasons is misinformation, disinformation. So how did you go about getting that story? How did you go about getting that quote? You know, did you try to reach this person, but were not successful? So you always try to get it from, you know, the primary source. That would be my suggestion.
We also reached out to another editorial leader who thinks about ethics a lot.
One thing I always say to my team is do not cite third-party sources. Like, so for example, I say sometimes like I've had, you know, if a team member is like, according to the Toronto Star, I'm like, no, this is not happening. It's not out of disrespect to the Star. It's more like, why are we citing another source when we could just do the reporting ourselves?
That's Anita Lee. She's the founder and editor-in-chief of The Green Line, a local online news outlet in Toronto. She's on the Media Ethics Committee for the Canadian Association of Journalists, and she's also a visiting professor here at Toronto Metropolitan University.
Especially during a time in the early 2010s when there was like the rise of like Web 2.0, there's a rise of a lot of venture-backed digital-focused newsrooms that were really about quantity, there was a huge kind of issue and problem with that, right? I think people are becoming much more aware that that's not appropriate. And I think a lot of journalists members of the public actually do like are much more critical when it comes to the quality of the news that they're receiving. So they're like, well, if you see something like that, you're like, well, why am I going to McLean's if I can go to The Grid if they're the ones who actually reported the story, right? So my hope is that that's actually slowly changing over time.
But Anita says sometimes it does make sense to quote another publication.
If, for example, another publication has an original investigation where they have access to data or resources that nobody else has, then I would attribute them and make that really clear and give them the full credit, right? So that's kind of how our approach is.
The McLean's article that quoted The Grid, quoting Jessica, was not an investigation.
It's not out and out unethical, but I think it's like an example of one, lazy journalism, and two, a lack of courtesy to the person, because it is not in a context that she like she didn't expect that her quotes would be used in a context that she isn't aware of.
Jessica is not upset with McLean's. And to be clear, that quote they used was accurate. Although Jessica thinks critically about journalistic practices, she's very open to doing interviews related to her field of study.
I enjoy talking to the media and sharing research, and I see it as part of being a good academic, but also I feel like if I don't speak on this, like, they're probably going to get someone with like less expertise, and that like is kind of a disservice.
That hint of lack of trust doesn't come from nowhere. We'll get back to that. Jessica completed her PhD in psychology at UFT, completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Florida State University, and was an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. In February of 2023, she was hired as a tenure-track professor at McMaster University. She works in the social psychology program of the Department of Health, Aging, and Society. Dr. Maxwell has authored 25 peer-reviewed articles on everything from sexual well-being to romantic relationship dynamics. Jessica is clearly an expert in her field, and now also has extensive experience being interviewed.
As I've got more and more established in my career, I almost feel like a little bit of a duty to speak to the media. I think part of my motivation has been to try to legitimize relationship and sexuality science to the lay public, to be like, yeah, I know you all think, like, everyone feels like they have lived experience with these things, and of course they do, and of course that's valuable, but sometimes I think it is helpful to be like, well, no, we do know some things about this. Like, if we zoom out, you know, there's data from hundreds and hundreds of couples, and we know trends. So yeah, I think sometimes when I'm speaking to the media, it's really from this idea of trying to like do my best to represent our field and show to people that like there is data on this stuff.
That data doesn't always make it into the stories. When Jessica was still a grad student, a mainstream news organization contacted her to comment on a story.
And it was about casual sex on campus. And like rookie mistake, I kind of mentioned just a hint in amongst, you know, probably an hour long conversation where I brought in a lot of research and I would have done my, you know, prep, making sure I had my talking points and my citations. I think I offhandedly made a couple comments about kind of my undergrad experience. And of course, that is kind of what ended up in the article. And none of the more academic sources I cited. It wasn't like I like, you know, revealed like a specific instance of casual sex or anything like that. But I think I offhanded made comments about sort of how my friends and I approached sex and things like that. So at the time when it came out, I was really, I think, like embarrassed and kind of felt bad, A, because it made it sound like I threw my friends under the bus.
Many journalists consider comments made during an interview to be on the record, unless the interviewee specifically says something is off the record. At least, that's what many of us are taught. Jessica probably didn't know that at the time. Anita Lee points out there is often a power imbalance at play when we are interviewing people.
When you're somebody who's in a position of power, like a politician, and you have a lot of resources at your disposal, you can easily call out or hold accountable a publication that uses your quote out of context, right? Or actually takes an interview that you did with another publication and publishes it without your consent, right? So there's a lot of avenues for that. But for example, if you're somebody who's like very marginalized and you don't have access to power, you don't understand, you might not even be aware that your words are being taken out of context. You might not know how to address that. Like, there's no clear pathway. You're like, you know, how do you advocate for yourself? So it starts to become a problem, right? Like, people like that may have their words floating around on the internet without context, and they have no recourse and they don't know what to do.
As a journalist starting out, it makes me think about how I'll treat my sources. I think we need to be more transparent about how we work. Jessica has learned from her experience and is more careful during interviews now.
Kind of the main thing I took away is just, you know, never say anything personal. And I mean, perhaps I even overcorrected, right? Because now I think I'm at more of like a happy place where I'll give like a little bit of, you know, just more like off the cuff comments. But I think I was very, very then kind of more focused on making sure I said only scientific things, made sure that, you know, if possible, I could view it before it was published and things like that. So I think it did make me a little bit more prevention focused. And I'd say, unfortunately, probably for the first couple interviews after that I gave, I think I was higher in anxiety, just kind of anticipating like, oh no, what are they going to say? Like it, you know, kind of maybe a little bit distrustful. And again, like luckily I feel like I've since moved past all that, but I think like just having one negative experience can really like taint your perception of journalism, I guess.
And we are learning from what she's sharing.
And some of the better media experiences I've had have been, you know, people who maybe before the article goes to press, they let me see it to just make sure like, is there anything we need to correct? Or also even another thing I love is at the end of an interview, a journalist might say something like, is there anything we talked about or anything we didn't talk about that you want to add? And just like making it feel like a little bit more of like a partnership or a dialogue versus just kind of taking something. And I guess more broadly, I think it just reminds me of one of the things I've learned over the years is I try to be more wary of participating in stories where it seems like the person knows what they want you to say from the outset, right? So if they're saying, I'm looking for an expert to say that cuddle parties are amazing, like I probably won't agree to that. But if someone phrases it more like, hey, there's this new thing called cuddle parties, I'd be really curious your thoughts on the pros and cons, and I want to learn more about the motivations, then I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Like it doesn't seem like you're picking me because you already have your narrative in mind and you want to shoehorn me in. I like it more where it's like, oh, like let's actually talk about this.
I've learned a lot from Jessica. I'm surprised I was able to find her, but I'm glad I did. Hearing her story makes me want to do better. Anita Lee wants to see all of us doing better.
I mean, the fact that you guys are, you know, talking about this issue and you're at a journalism school like Toronto Metropolitan University, which is one of the best J schools in the country, like these kinds of conversations are the things that will change the way ethics are done for future generations. So I love that you guys are trying to hold like publications to a higher standard, right? Like that's how change starts to happen. Because sometimes things like, remember back in the day, like trauma-informed journalism wasn't a thing. You'd like parachute into a place, ask somebody about like their sexual assault and be like, peace, bye, and then just leave and then leave them to be possibly re-traumatized by the story that they're sharing. Also just as a member of the public, sharing journalism from places that hold themselves to that standard, that really prioritize original reporting, is a way to make, to signal to people like, hey, this is the kind of journalism I prize and I value.
As journalists, we are in a position of power and we have to be mindful about that and what we put out there about our sources. Informed consent is vital to building trust. I hope Jessica's interview experience with me was a good one.
Is there anything from this interview that you miss and would like to add?
Oh yeah, I told you that is my favorite question. No, I think I just want to reiterate too that like I know I've kind of focused on a lot maybe of the negatives just by sort of the questions we've been asking and things like that and sort of some of my more negative experiences, but I just want to reiterate that like by and large, I've worked with so many amazing journalists who really want to get the story right, want to represent my position. They've all been really responsible. A lot of them have been really curious and willing to learn and just genuinely lovely people to chat with and learn from. So I do want to make sure it's clear that like I am very pro-media. I've like, you know, 95% of my interactions with the media have been amazing and they've been helpful in getting my work out there. And so I think it's really, really important. And so, I think it's really great that you all are thinking about this and just really kind of hopefully it's kind of the type of relationship that can keep growing in the future between academics and journalists, and especially academics who are covering topics that might be more, whether we want to call it taboo or sensational or, you know, might be perceived as fluffy. I think it's like extra important in those cases.
We Met UN is a production by journalism students from the Creative School at Toronto Metropolitan University. This episode was produced by Sheila Reed and me, Lily Han. Mixing and sound design by Bianca Thompson. Additional mixing by Mia Johnson. Additional research and reporting by Bunnar Yirgalem and Jirel Penarroyo. Sherry Okeke is our executive producer and professor. Angela Glover is our director of audio production. Our season 2 graphic was created by Mana Hosseini. Web design by Daniela Olario. Special thanks to Juleka Lantigua, founder of LWC Studios, for her support during our pitching process. And thank you to the Creative School for the Curriculum Innovation Grant that made Juleka's participation possible. I'm Lily Han. Thanks for listening.